Brendan Haywood is a basketball analyst who spent 13 seasons in the NBA, won a championship in 2011 with the Mavericks, and he's one of only four men who were teammates with both Michael Jordan and LeBron James in the NBA. He's been tweeting and talking about The Last Dance. Wanted to chat with him about it. He's nice enough to do it. So, Bennett, please make Brendan Haywood the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
Big fellas. GP, how you been?
Man, I hope I can live up to that intro right there, man. I'm the big interview, man. So that's a lot of pressure.
You certainly measure the right way. You know, you 7 foot one. You certainly measure enough, big enough to be the big interview.
This too is true.
How you been, baby? You been all right?
I've been good, man. Like everybody else, laying low, social distancing, staying in the house, a little bit bored. But you know, we're gonna get through this on the other side somehow, someway.
Somehow, someway, indeed. I'm talking to Brendan Haywood, a former NBA champion, played 13 seasons in the league. So I wanted to talk to you because you were teammates with Michael Jordan. You watched The Last Dance. I know last two episodes last night. What did you think of the documentary?
I think it was great. I think the documentary was incredible. ESPN did great work. Their documentary is always pretty good, but I think this is their best one. Just simply because they showed Michael Jordan more as a man than we've ever seen him. When you look at Michael Jordan, normally you think icon, the guy that's selling you sneakers and Gatorade and everything else, or you think of the cold-blooded assassin. But when you saw some of those interviews and you saw how he broke down talking about his teammates and, you know, his love for his guys and how he really wanted to go back and do it again and how not having a chance to compete for a seventh title really ate at him. Like, you just saw how human he was. Even when he retired, you just saw how the stress of being Michael Jordan wore him down. So, like, the fact that we got to see this side of Michael Jordan, this is something that we've never seen. Even his daughter, I think she tweeted out and said, like, listen, I've never seen my dad in his light because, you know, he normally likes to keep things pretty close to the vest, and he let everybody in for, like, the first time ever.
Well, you guys have the North Carolina connection. You both played at UNC, and then you were teammates in Washington for two seasons. Had you ever seen this side of him?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, I'd never seen the Michael Jordan that they were talking about writing poetry with his teammates. I never saw that guy. I never saw Michael Jordan getting emotional about the cry about something. I never saw the Michael Jordan that just said, man, it's not fun to be me. Like, I always thought it was great to be, even as a teammate, I just looked like, wow, that guy's life must be great. He's got all the money, all the cars, all the fame. I never saw the side of Michael Jordan that he kept hidden, this the pain from his father passing, all that. I never saw any of that because as his teammate, he had to be the alpha. He had to be the leader. And at all times, he had to have his chest puffed out and say, I'm Michael Jordan. But this documentary took me inside Michael Jordan, something that I'd never seen, even though I played with him for 2 years.
What was it like playing with him for 2 years? Was it fun? Was it hard? Was it a combination of things?
It's all that. Playing with Michael Jordan is fun. It's hard. It's an emotional roller coaster. You're going to have some days where you're winning and you're playing well, and Mike's going to have you feeling like you're the best player in the world. Yeah, me feeling like I was a young Patrick Ewing. Then there's going to be some days where we lose, I don't do well. He's going to have me feeling like I was Kwame Brown's stepbrother.
Right.
And that's just the way he was. That was his leadership style. Like, if you weren't doing something right, he was going to correct you, and he's going to correct you harshly. And when I looked at the documentary, when I saw guys like B.J. Armstrong saying, hey, listen, Mike wasn't nice every day. He wasn't a tyrant, but he wasn't nice every day. I'm like, yo, those guys are giving you the real. That's the truth. And you know, leadership styles are different. You can't be a perfect leader. Like, a leader's not going to be nice to everybody every single day, because sometimes as a leader, you have to get into guys' faces and tell them things they don't want to hear. And Mike was never scared to do that.
What was that like? Did you know him before Washington because of the North Carolina connection, or did you meet him when you became teammates with him?
He came to play pickup one time at Carolina, and so I had met him playing pickup, which was crazy because, like, Carolina's basketball pickup run is probably the best you're going to see on the East Coast. Especially when everybody's there. All the pros come back, combined with the college guys at UNC, and then we have the guys coming over from Duke and all the other NC State, other schools mixing in. We'll have three courts going of all pros and college guys. And Mike came back, and he was That was the first time I met him, and he looked like Mike. And after that, like, he was killing all day. Like, he was destroying Jerry Stackhouse. And that was back when Stackhouse would come back and just, like, beat up on all the young players because he was so good. And Mike just destroyed him that day. And I remember afterwards, I was like, yo, man, have you been training or something? He's like, no, I haven't played a day since the championship.
Huh.
So, like, that was the first time I met Mike and talked to him. And it was amazing for me to see that this dude is destroying everybody, and he hasn't picked up a ball since the shot versus Utah. So that was the first time that I met him. I didn't really have a relationship with him before I got to Washington because I only met him one time. But obviously because I was a UNC guy, you know, he wanted to see me do well.
I'm talking to Brendan Haywood, a basketball analyst who spent 13 seasons in the NBA, won a championship in 2011, was teammates in Washington with Michael Jordan. What was it like traveling with MJ? A circus in every city?
Yeah, it was definitely a circus. Like, I mean, there was always people around that wanted autographs. People were always in the lobby. You know, like, but that's to be expected. I think the biggest thing with MJ to let me know that he was bigger than life was how the other guys in the NBA looked at him. Like, even, like, you would see, like, after games, it would be, like, you know, four or five guys from the other team, like, hey, Mike, can I get an autograph? Like, you don't, that's not normal. You don't see that. Even playing with LeBron, it wasn't five guys waiting for LeBron's autograph. Like, it was just, it was something different. You would see guys, like, I noticed that Mike would say this to our point guard at the time, Chris Whitten. He'll at the jump ball, he'd be like, hey, Whit, make sure I get the ball early. Young fella's enamored. And he would literally be watching a guy that, you know, maybe two or three years in the league that's just enamored. He's looking at Mike's shoes. He's just looking at how he chews his gum. He's looking at everything like Mike could just sense it. So that was the difference for me. It wasn't traveling and seeing the circus of the fans. The thing for me was seeing other grown men, other professionals in awe of this guy.
I've seen that as well. Like when I was at, obviously he moves on, goes into running a basketball team, and he would be at some of these, you know, AAU events or grassroots events. And like when he walked in the gym, like even Coach K's there, Roy's there, John Calipari, other NBA players, LeBron there sometimes. When Michael Jordan walked in the gym, it was like everybody stopped. Like it was a, he has a big presence about him.
Yeah. Big time presence. Always, and he's always lived up to it too. But when he walks into the room, everybody stops. I think that was kind of what he talked about. He didn't always like that. He didn't always, you know, sometimes it seemed like from that documentary, sometimes Mike just wanted to be a regular guy that took his kids to the movies and got a slice of pizza. And he couldn't do that. He couldn't live that lifestyle.
Talking to Brendan Haywood, he was teammates with Michael Jordan in Washington. I mentioned also teammates with LeBron James. What's the, because those guys get, and I think your list is slightly different. I think you've got Kareem above LeBron right now, but Michael and LeBron is the gone, it's been the debate for years now. You are only four people have ever been teammates with both of them in the NBA, and you're one of those four. What do they have in common, and what is the biggest difference between Michael Jordan and LeBron James?
Are you talking about on the court or off the court?
Just in, let's say off the court. I'm interested in them as people.
Okay. Off the court, what they have in common is that they both have a desire to win. They both work hard. So when I say off the court, I'm still talking about the practice court.
Sure.
Like LeBron's going to do everything. Like there'll be times where LeBron he'll come to practice and he's already been up at his house and worked out and lifted and did his yoga and everything else. And then he comes in to get his shots up, and then he goes on to practice. And Mike was the same way. Like, Mike would literally be there sometimes at 8 o'clock in the morning working out with Tim Grover. And I'm like, dude, I know you were just up till 4 o'clock in the morning playing cards. And so, like, they both had this insane work ethic because they wanted to be great. That's the similarity. And that's pretty much where the similarities stop. As people, they are totally different people. They have totally different leadership styles. Mike is in your face. LeBron is passive aggressive. So, like, if you mess up LeBron, like, with Mike, Mike's going to walk over there and tell you, listen, you got to set the screen right here. If you're not going to do it, we're going to put you on the bench. That's what he's told me before. So, now, with LeBron, he might see the same thing, but, you know, he might wait and make a tweet about it and send it out, and only you know what the tweet is about, but everybody else won't know. So, like, he's a little bit different. He doesn't want to be in your face until he has to be. So that's where they're different. And then the other difference is that LeBron loves being LeBron, whereas Mike didn't always like being Mike. And LeBron wants to include everybody in LeBron's world. So he's going to have all the nice gifts. All the stuff that LeBron is sponsored by, all his teammates get that. Hey, GP, I swear I had so many Beats by Dre headphones, I was giving them away. I mean, I had the in-ears, the big ones. I had all the different colors. I had it. And he was about Samsung, man. I was getting Samsung phones, and I was an iPhone guy. I was just giving them away to people that I knew. The new LeBrons came out. He made sure everybody that wanted them got laced with them several pair. Like, he was that type of guy. He'd take everybody out to dinner. Everybody come to the movie. He was that inclusive type of guy, whereas Mike was a little bit different. He was kind of off to himself. He had his own circle within the team. The guys that play cards, you come to his suite, you play cards. The guys that don't, we'll see him at shoot around. So that's their differences. Like, LeBron kind of wanted to include everybody. Mike was kind of like, hey, I'm off to myself unless you do the things I do. Do you golf? Do you smoke cigars? Do you play cards? Other than that, I'm really not trying to hang with you. And then the difference, the really major difference, is just being cutthroat. Like, Mike is cutthroat. He wants to win at everything. Like, if there's a shooting drill, you might think you're doing a shooting drill. He's competing with you in the drill. That's, and like, LeBron wants to win, but he's just not as cutthroat as Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is cutthroat. Everything is motivation. You watch the doc. Karl Malone getting MVP, that's motivation. You saw his Hall of Fame speech. Everybody that ever slighted him is motivation. Mike is super cutthroat. That's the main difference between him and LeBron. So LeBron's leadership style is actually a little bit nicer. Mike's just won a little bit more.
That's super interesting stuff. I'm wrapping up here with Brendan Haywood. Last thing before I let you go. Are you optimistic we're going to resume this basketball season at some point?
Yes, I'm very optimistic. I think the fact that we're starting to get the facilities open and the players want to play, I think that at some point they're going to try to get things done. Now, I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one, so I don't know what's going to happen. If a COVID case happens when guys come back, do they shut it down again? Do they just quarantine players? I don't know how that works. But I think we will see the NBA come back this year simply because the fans want it, the players want it, the owners want it. And when everybody's on the same side and there's a lot of money on the line, they're going to find a way to make this work. Players have already said, hey, we'll be willing to be away from our families if we have to go quarantine in Disney or Vegas or wherever to get these games played. And also from a business standpoint, if the players don't play, not only do they not get their money, but they mess up the salary cap for next year because the basketball-related revenue gets all screwed up. So, like, there's a lot on the line here. I know, like, life is more important. But trust me, everybody's looking at them dollars. Players want their money now, GP, just like you do. I see them nice suits you're wearing on CBS.
My man. That's Brendan Haywood, 13 years in the NBA, now a basketball analyst. He's on TV everywhere. Absolute best. I appreciate you being here, buddy, and I hope to see you real soon.
No problem, my guy.
All right, baby, I'll see you. Bye-bye. That's Brendan Haywood, a basketball analyst who spent 13 seasons in the NBA. You know, I've been lucky enough to work with a lot of former basketball players, former college stars, former NBA players. That dude right there is like tip top. Mm-hmm. Like, you could not find a more down the earth, more fun, just doesn't act like he spent 13 seasons in the NBA and made $100 million. Like, he does, treats everybody awesome, knows everybody's name, like just a really genuinely good dude. You know, and that's why his post playing career is going so well. Like, he's not just good at his job, he's incredibly, incredibly likable. And I hope that came across on radio. Brendan Haywood, just absolutely terrific. And it was interesting talking about the differences between LeBron and Michael. Like Michael has no problem being right in your face. Like, you did something wrong, let's talk about it right now. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's not talk. Just you listen, I'll tell you exactly what happened. Whereas LeBron's a little more hands-off, a little more passive-aggressive.
I might subtweet or something. Right.
And so it's interesting stuff. I've talked to Brendan about a lot of that before, but obviously with The Last Dance wrapping up last night, I thought he'd be perfect.
The Jason and John Show.
He is Kenneth Roy. He's the former coach at Nationwide Academy, the mentor of new Memphis commitment DeAndre Williams, and he joins us now. Hey, Coach Roy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you guys going on this Monday?
Everything is great here in Memphis. I think there's a real level of excitement about DeAndre, obviously, and his announcement. So let's just kind of jump into that. You know, obviously you were with him every step of the way in this decision-making process. What led you guys to Memphis?
I mean, well, when you ask a question like that, man, that's a really, really good question. And then we went back and we looked at all four programs, and we did the pros and the cons of each program. And we did the process of elimination. And what stood out, I mean, just head and shoulders above everyone, is how Coach Hardaway did his recruiting process. I mean, his recruiting process was second to none. And that's what we loved about him. We loved about the program. And I enjoyed the Zoom that he shared with us, with his coaching staff. And recruiting process was unbelievable because, as I indicated in other interviews, he got to know us and who we are as individuals. From the mom, from DeAndre, and myself. And he wanted to really just show his genuine self. And that's what just took us, man, because he was so genuine from the very beginning. And then he let us know about, you know, the university and what it has to offer and what DeAndre can play a part of what he's trying to do and accomplish for the city of Memphis. And, we couldn't turn it down, man. And DeAndre looked at that, and he took the bull by the horns, and he ran with it.
What was the urgency level like for Memphis, Coach, in terms of the priority level that clearly they were making DeAndre Williams out to be, Coach?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that it was an urgency on Coach Hardaway's part. I would just say that he was really consistent because he never panicked, no matter, even when Kentucky – came into play. Coach Hardaway, he stayed steadfast, he stayed on course, and he continued to process and let us know exactly what was going on from the very beginning. And what we knew about Coach Hardaway is that once DeAndre hit the portal, he was in there from the very beginning until the end. Kentucky came a week later, and you know, you have to look at it that way. And then, you know, they're Kentucky. You know, they think they can just show up to the dance and, you know, and steal your girl. But you know, I guess they had another thing coming when it came to Coach Hardaway. Coach Hardaway lived with nobody stealing his girl. That's all I can say.
Yeah. We are, of course, talking to Kenneth Roy, coach at Nationwide Academy, was the coach of DeAndre Williams there and has really helped him along the way. You know, as somebody who is, you know, so integral in the process, was it difficult for you to sort of knowing, you know, what Kentucky was saying in the recruitment and sort of their presence? Was it hard for you to see the reports that Kentucky was not interested? Like, I always wonder, like, is it a challenge for, you know, coaches and parents not to respond and get in the middle of that when, you know, information is being disseminated that might not be true?
So the question you asked me was, was Kentucky interested
could you just maybe address that? Because there were reports that they had quote unquote backed off and that they weren't, you know, and I talked to DeAndre on Friday and he said they were up until, you know, they were fighting until the end.
And that is absolutely correct, man. Do not believe any literature that was put out on Kentucky to back off. Kentucky didn't back off, no way, no shape, no form. DeAndre was receiving texts up until the very last day about how much they wanted DeAndre. So, I mean, that's just their spin that they're putting on it. And, you know, and it's a shame that they would have to do something like that, knowing the stature of what Kentucky is. Hey, if they lost out, they lost out. They don't need to spin it. I mean, because we have evidence showing that they was in it to the very end. So I don't know why they would do that. If it's something that they feel ashamed losing to Memphis, hey, it is what it is. But I looked at it this way with Kentucky. Kentucky showed up a week later, and we gave everybody the ground rules of how to play ball. And Kentucky, they started going, doing their own thing, dealing with DeAndre directly, not coming through me, jumping over hoops through me. And, you know, that played an important part as well because they didn't play the rules correctly. You know, they thought that they could just go directly to DeAndre. They thought they could go directly to the mom and, you know, not even talk to me but one time during the whole process. So if I'm a part of the process, why do you think you're going to eliminate me and think you're going to get the prize? That's not going to happen like that. Because, I mean, why are you not talking to me? I'm a part of this situation. So Kentucky, again, they didn't play the rules. They were in there to the very end. And, hey, Memphis won out. That's all I can say to that.
How confident are you, Coach? How confident is Penny when he talks to you that you all will get the waiver, that DeAndre will be able to play immediately? We've been sitting here breaking it down, and Memphis desperately needs it. They haven't had a great history with these recently, but if there's ever been a textbook case of why a guy should be eligible immediately, it seems like it's DeAndre. How confident are you all that you'll get it, that you'll be able to play immediately?
Well, you know, we're extremely confident, but, you know, no one never knows on how this is going to play out.
Right.
All they can do is submit their case, and we feel like that we have an extraordinary case for DeAndre. And once we lay out all the chips, we see where they were, where they fall, and then all we can do is just pray to the above and hope that it all works out.
I'm with you on the prayer. Lord knows I know that. any thought at all, though, Coach, I got to ask just because, you know, you're talking about plans. If you don't get the waiver, any thought of what you all would do then? Would you sit out the year? Would you move up, go pro? I mean, any thought to that at all?
Hey, that's a fantastic question. But, you know, during the recruiting process, Coach Hardaway gave DeAndre a plan B and a plan C if the waiver didn't work out. And if you want to know more about that plan B and plan C, then that's something you would have to discuss with DeAndre and Coach Hardaway. I don't think I'm privileged to talk about their plan B and plan C, but there is a plan in action. And that was another thing that enticed DeAndre on coming to Memphis, because Coach Hardaway had a great thought process on how he was recruiting DeAndre. And he also let him know, just in case, if it doesn't work out, this is what I still have lined up, where you have a couple more choices. So, you know, I think they'll be better set to answer that question than me.
Yeah,
it's fair.
We are, of course, talking to Kenneth Roy, the mentor, former coach of DeAndre Williams there at Nationwide Academy. In terms of the roster, you know, I know you guys have probably had a little bit more time to think about it and look into it. Just was your thoughts on you know, the roster that DeAndre is stepping into. I mean, they had the number one recruiting class in 2019, and, you know, obviously James and Precious are moving on, but a lot of those pieces are coming back. What do you think when you look at the roster at Memphis?
You know, I love the Memphis roster, man. And like, as you indicated, that they had the number one recruiting class last year. And all DeAndre is going to be able to do is add a piece to the puzzle. And what he brings to the table, man, he's a special young man that's going to be able to have his players and have his teammates rally around him. And he's just going to do whatever it takes to win. So if he's required to be a 15 rebounder that game, that's what he's going to do. If Coach needs him to score 20-plus points, that's what he's going to do. DeAndre is going to do whatever's going the coach needs him to do, because he's a winner. And that's what it's all about, winning and, you know, getting a championship.
What's the best you've ever seen him play, Coach? This game against the Ball State game, the Miami game, was it before then? When you've seen him at his best, where's it been?
Well, I saw him at his best when he played the Miami game, when he went, I think, 17 of 18.
Yes, sir.
He finished with 37 points. He was phenomenal that game. I mean, how many 16s you know go 17 from 18? I mean, he's not shooting layups. He's shooting mid-range, three-pointers. He's dunking. He's driving to the basket. I mean, he's just had a phenomenal, phenomenal game. And, you know, I suggest everyone take a look at that game, and you'll see what type of special player DeAndre Williams is. I mean, I know the city and you guys going to embrace this young man. Man, he's, because you know what? What I love about this kid, he's, as I indicated, he's so charismatic. But when he's smiling on the court, when he's walking around and he's happy-go-lucky, and all you know, he's about winning, he's about going to classroom, being in his classroom every day, not missing no practice, showing up, working hard. Man, you can respect a young man like that and knows what he's trying to do and what he's trying to accomplish. I mean, you guys are going to love this man. I mean, y'all going to love this young man. Going to love him.
You know, obviously he missed 14 games last season with the back injury, Coach. You and I talked about it a little bit, for all of Memphis. The expectation is that he's healthy. Is that sort of what you understand?
To my understanding, he's completely healthy. You know, and it's a shame that he missed 14 games last year because to all indications to what we have found out once he got a private therapist and everything, that the school had misdiagnosed him and treating him improperly. So that's another hurdle we have to cross on what transpired on that. But the young man is already working out. When he came here and spent a week with me, well, we stayed in the gym, worked out, you know, before I call it a stress reliever, before he made his announcement. And he was looking very, very good. I'm excited about it and what he's coming bringing to the table.
Interesting, Coach. I do want to follow up real quick on that. You said misdiagnosed at his previous school?
Yeah. They were treating him whatever they were treating him for, that was not the case. The therapist that worked on DeAndre indicated that he shouldn't have been out longer than 2 weeks. So you take that for what it's worth.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And instead he was out for, you know, basically half the season.
There you go.
Huh.
There you go.
And you guys, I don't want to pry, but I mean, you guys sound like that's going to be part of your case as well.
Again, a lot of information is just, it's a lot of things that, man, that you guys don't really know at this particular time. But you will know, because eventually it's all going to come out. There's a lot of stuff that went on during this process with DeAndre that eventually came out towards the end. And it was very, very disturbing. So, but again, you know, I'm sure that Coach Hardaway and his compliance people and everybody's going to do their due diligence and get every bit of the information and process it the way it needs to process it. And those officials are going to take it and then take the bull by the horns and build their case.
Yeah. Hey, Coach, man, congratulations on everything.
Thank
over
you,
the
Coach.
Weekend. We're excited to have DeAndre in Memphis, and we look forward to, you know, hopefully being able to see you guys play in person this year.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
Hey, Coach,
that'd be great.
Appreciate the time.
Thank
as
you.
Always. Talk soon.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.